And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show for this Tuesday. It's the 2nd of December 2025. It's great to be with you here. And this show, for the next 3 hours, we've got a great mix of keeping you up to date with all the very latest news, platforming your very important views and conversations that matter with people from across the Northwest and beyond. Our lines are open for you right now, so if you want to comment on anything we've talked about, or will be talking about, I should say, or in fact, if you want to pass on some information or raise your own topic, pass on some good news, like we have in the past, track down that unsung hero. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000. We love you to interact with us from outside the Republic as well, because we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of you listening in different spots around the world. Feel free to text, you know what to do, 00353, drop the O and away you go. You can email comments at highlandradio.com as well. Or comment on the stream if you're watching, because this show is broadcast live every single day for you to watch, just as you might watch any other show on the TV. You can do so on your TV if you're at home or working from home, on your smart telly. Most of them are smart now. Open up the YouTube app or open up your Fire Stick and just open up the YouTube app then and type in Highland Radio Ireland. And there we are. We're across Facebook and streaming on the X platform as well. On to the papers this morning. The Irish Times. What do you think about this? Tasers could be on Irish city streets by Christmas. What are your views on Gardaí having access and the use of tasers? Like, it's inevitable that at some point down the line, a taser will be used on the streets of Donegal. Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that's a bad thing? But frontline uniform Gardaí could be using taser stun guns almost immediately under a proposal being brought to government by Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan. The stun guns could be used in policing on the streets of Dublin, Waterford and Kilkenny over the Christmas period if approved by Cabinet today. It would be the first time that uniformed Gardaí would be armed with tasers and would mark a significant step up for An Garda Síochána, whose frontline personnel are not armed. However, informed sources stress there is no consideration being given to arming uniform Gardaí with firearms. Not at this point, but you know yourself. You see sometimes the guards interacting with someone who's thrown a wobbly on the streets or something, and they do look very vulnerable. They do look like they don't really have much to tackle. You know, they extend their nightstick and you go, well, what's going on? Or it could be a slippery slope. I don't know what you think. 086 60 25,000. Commissioner Mann regulates Irish media, and they have been looking at the funding of RTE. And Commissioner Mann has recommended that both RTE and TG Cahir be given millions of euro extra to help them meet their public service obligations. The conclusion of its five-year review of funding for the two broadcasters is that RTE should be allocated 255 million in 2026 and 275 million in 2027. Now, I'm saying this not as someone who's a journalist or a broadcaster or whatever way, or an idiot, whatever way you wanted to frame me, but as a person living in this country who watches no RTE at all. I don't watch any RTE. I mean, I used to in the past, but there's nothing on it that's of any use to me. Like, they've got a couple of films coming out for Christmas, Oppenheimer and Barbie, right? These are films I've seen three years ago, and I don't necessarily want to see them constantly interrupted. It's just the way it is. And, of course, occasionally they do the Late Late Show next Friday, of course, will be must-see TV. They do occasional really good investigative stuff. But 275 million euro a year on top of license fee, I just can't see. I struggle to see the justification, because I don't watch much Virgin Media TV either, if I'm completely honest with you. But they're doing, you know, they're out there doing the same thing. And I listen to some of the coverage of stuff. And to be honest with you, I listen to some of the news coverage or the angles that are taken on things, or the styles of interviews for people who are in government or who aren't in government and stuff. And I'll be honest with you, like, just again, as a consumer, I'm like, well, like, what, you know, this show's much, much more balanced than that, you know, much more even, much more challenging, equally asking certain questions and stuff. And it just does make me wonder where the money's going and what it's for. I don't know what you think, and I'm not RTE bashing. I genuinely am speaking as someone who consumes an awful lot of media. I watch a lot of streaming stuff. I watch a lot of scheduled stuff. I am a very good example of a good customer for these types of organizations. And I just don't really think that, I think there needs to be some further justification for that spending. TG Cahir is a different kettle of fish. I think TG Cahir does a great job. I'd watch more TG Cahir than I would RTE. I think it's very important there is a platform for the Irish language. And also there's some just really good programming on TG Cahir. But so I have no issue with that. But anyway, the recommendation for TG Cahir was that it get 36 point, sorry, 60, my word, that is hard to read. That it would get 66.3 million in 2026 and 67.5 million in the following year. Both figures are above what the government has budgeted. However, it's not expected the Media Minister Patrick O'Donovan, who will bring the report to Cabinet today, will ask for a higher allocation. Instead, he's likely to argue that the government has already acted on the recommendation, given significant multiple funding uplifts for the period of 2025 to 2027. That was a massive amount of money. So they gave 240 million for 2006 and 260 million for 2027. So that's half a billion. I actually really can't get my head around that. So RTE is being given half a billion of Exchequer funding between 26 and 27. Half a billion. A lot of repeats. Okay, anyway. I don't know when you see the figures written down. I'm not against RTE, by the way. Don't get me wrong. It's like anything. Conversely, we are struggling on the ground because motorists have been put under pressure at the pumps, with November figures showing a 4-cent rise in the cost of a litre of diesel and 2-cent jump in the price of a litre of petrol. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. The latest monthly fuel price survey from AA Ireland shows a lose-lose scenario for drivers as even electric vehicle charging costs are increasing. Diesel rose to 172 per litre last month, up from 168 in October, though there are some places charging 181 for a litre of diesel right now, and some places still charging 168, and closer to the border you get, some charging even less than that. So moving on here, petrol is at 174, again, some places charging 168, others charging 181, but the average is 174. That's up from 172 in the same period. The November rises come at a time when many households are already facing higher winter costs, making fuel spend an even larger portion of weekly budgets. Let's go to the red top tabloids now, the Irish Daily Star. Abuse survivor Natasha O'Brien said Irish people need to reclaim the tricolour because it represents peace and unity and not hate. In recent months, flags have been erected on lampposts across the country by, and I'm using their words here, by far-right groups aiming to intimidate immigrant and minority communities. In some cases, councils have taken down Irish flags where they believe they're being used to spread hatred. Miss O'Brien has joined a new campaign called Our Flag, which aims to bring communities together and reclaim the flag as a symbol of unity, inclusion and hope. What do you think about that, though? Like, where I drive, commute, sort of scoot around, I've seen tricolours nailed up poles. I don't think it's really looks very nice for the flag, to be honest with you. I mean, I would have no problem with every house in the country flying a flag respectfully on a flagpole, but people get these cheap flags and nail them to a lamppost and they're in tatters. And I actually think it really is not very good. Secondly, I don't think people are intimidated by it because there are an awful lot of people here who maybe they're targeting that actually want to have Irish citizenship and stand beneath that flag proudly. So I don't think it serves that purpose. I think just the flags look really tatty, which is sad. And I don't know if it intimidates people, even if that's the motivation for it. I love to see the flag flying, as I say, but it has to be done respectfully, I think. You know, as I say, out at your house, wherever it might be, it's the Irish flag, right? So I don't think how that should be seen necessarily as something that's intimidating. But I'll be honest with you, when I see them cheap flags nailed to posts, flapping in the wind, often they're flying the wrong direction, so they look like a flag of a different country altogether. I actually think that's disrespectful for the flag, even if the person who's put it up feels the motivation is sound. It looks tacky, nailing a flag to a telegraph pole. I think it's disrespectful of the flag. But I'd have no problem if everyone in the country wants to fly a flag respectfully at their house. You know, I mean, it's the Irish flag. Why should anyone be ashamed of doing that? And it really doesn't get to the core reason as to, you know, why people are trying to intimidate others if that's what they're trying to do. But you go to any country in the world. I've never gone to Spain and thought, my God, there's too many Spanish flags here. I need to get out. Or I've never gone to France or Britain, you know, where they have every lamppost in London with flags. I've never gone, God, this is hot. You need to get rid of this flag. It's intimidating. I don't feel welcome. So it's a funny conversation. I think people are talking about it, right? But they're not really getting into the nitty-gritty of the conversation, really. To be honest with you, it's kind of a bizarre. I'd love to tease that out with someone. I'm kind of, you know, riffing off the top of my head, but I hope you get the point that I'm trying to get. Is that why should we be ashamed to fly our flag? Why would anyone find it intimidating? But also at the same time, hammering up these cheap flags that fall into bits and look crap flying. I don't feel any pride at all as a proud Irish person. I don't feel any pride at all driving past a flag in tatters nailed to a telegraph pole. I think, like, my God, that's actually really disrespectful. Erect a pole and put a nice flag up, fine. No problem with that. But anyway, what do you think? 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. As I say, I don't even know what the point is trying to make, because a lot of, say it is trying to intimidate people and say Ireland for the Irish or whatever, even say that's what it was, as offensive as some might find that. The people it's directed at want to be Irish as well and seek nationality of the country to proudly stand under that flag themselves. So 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call on 07491 25,000. Just a word of warning about e-scooters, because they're great, right? I would love an e-scooter. It's fantastic fun. It gives people independence. You know, we need to see them being used correctly and safely and all that kind of stuff. But it's given people an opportunity to get around that were struggled before. The only problem, not the only problem, but one of the problems is that e-scooters now are the leading cause of traumatic brain injuries found in children. This at one of the main brain injury hospitals in Dublin. So before they existed, people weren't turning up with brain injuries coming off scooters, but they're coming off them and suffering really severe brain injuries. Report author Dr. Erwin Gill said, despite under 16, not being allowed to ride e-scooters on public roads, there was a high number of injuries in kids from their use. He said e-scooters are now the leading cause of traumatic brain injury in children admitted to the National Neurosurgical Centre at Temple Street prior to May 24. And thankfully, a lot of the kids go on to make full physical recoveries, but the nature of their injuries, cracked skulls, etc., it can cause tiredness, mood swings, difficulty concentrating and stuff. So, you know, it's just to think on, they're great, but you can come off them. It's a tight spill. And unfortunately, lots of kids are incurring brain injuries. It's the leading cause of traumatic brain injury. And finally, Volodymyr Zelensky is in Ireland. He arrived last night. He brought his wife with him. Today he'll pay a courtesy call to President Catherine Connolly at Áras an Uachtaráin. It sounds like strange terminology. I heard it on our news as well. I'm not questioning it. It's just, what was a courtesy call? What's he stopping for, a wee-wee? But then he'll be met by Taoiseach Micheál Martin on the steps of government buildings before addressing a joint sitting of the Houses of the Oireachtas in the afternoon. Mr. Zelensky also will attend the inaugural Ireland-Ukraine Economic Forum with Taoiseach Simon Harris. And I think Ireland has announced another multi-million euro non-lethal investment to support Ukraine in their ongoing battle with the Russians. Okay, that was a run through some of the papers today. Interesting, and we hopefully have a bit of coverage on this later on. We had two interesting conversations yesterday with callers as it relates to the Mercosur deal and Brazilian beef and what have you. And between then and now, it's turned out that there's been a product recall of beef that was found to have the very the very same hormones we were talking about, how it might be quite hard to track. So I thought that was quite interesting. We might get to that a little later on in the programme. Right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Let's say good morning to Michael Gilligan, who's Manager of Revenues, Dublin Airport Frontier Management Branch. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on the programme. Now, stricter penalties are being announced for people who are found to have more tobacco products than allowed when entering the country. What are the rules and regs at the moment? And then we'll talk, I suppose, about what action will be taken if people breach them.
Sure. Greg, I think it's important that we just clarify what the situation is really here. Sometimes the headlines run away in a particular direction. Basically, yesterday morning, we initiated a national information campaign to raise awareness of the long-standing arrangements that apply when you're bringing duty-paid tobacco products back into Ireland when you're travelling from another member state. And those allowances haven't, in fact, changed at all, and are not going to change, and they're quite generous. Those allowances are 800 cigarettes, 400 cigarillos, 200 cigars, and 1 kilo of tobacco. And we believe in revenue those amounts and those allowances are in line with what's happening throughout Europe. They pay excise duties, they support the public health measures, and they also facilitate the legitimate person who's travelling back into Ireland.
So that's from EU countries. Changed. That's from EU countries, so Spain, your Portugals, whatever it might be. For non-EU countries, i.e., you know, UK, for an example, and elsewhere, there are different limits. Is that correct? From non-EU countries?
Yeah, from non-EU countries, there are different limits, and their duty. They're a totally different tax regime than what we're talking about here today. What we're talking about here today is what the limits you have when you're coming back in from another EU country.
Okay.
And just for your listeners in particular, anybody travelling from Northern Ireland into the Republic, these very advantageous limits would apply.
Right. So what is actually changing? As you say, the limits aren't changing. It's how breaches of those limits are enforced.
Yeah, what's actually changing is clarity around the consequences of exceeding these limits. And underneath the new regulations, which are taking effect from the 9th of December, if somebody travelling from another member state brings in duty-paid tobacco products in excess of these quantities, well, then all the tobacco products will be liable to seizure. Mm. And depending on how egregious the situation is, they may also be prosecutors.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a moment. So up until now, and I've never, it's not something I've experienced, Michael. So up until now, if someone brought, say, for instance, in 1,000 cigarettes and the limit was 800, up until this week, would it have been the 200 in excess that would have been disposed of? But now it would be the 1,000 cigarettes that are being disposed of.
Yeah. If you had brought in 1,000 cigarettes, the customs officer would have had a discussion with you about these, what your intention was, were they for personal use, had you purchased them, and you may have there would be an element of discretion available to the customs officer to allow you either to keep these products depending on the outcome of your discussion with him or whether he was going to seize the products or not. But the very key issue is, as you have pointed out, is from the 9th of December, if any of the amounts and any of the limits for any category of tobacco product is exceeded, well, then all the tobacco products in your possession will be, in fact, seized.
Now, this is where it gets a little bit complicated because the discretion now is not there as such, but there is discretion, if you would call it that, in terms of, you know, the level of abuse of these categories. Because I'm not sure if there's a specific point whereby someone might actually find themselves before the courts on this. So the best thing to do, Michael, is to let you explain that as best you can, because there's been some cases of really remarkable instances of not just individuals, but groups of individuals transporting massive amounts of these products into this country. So what is there a specific point that, you know, charges, or maybe you don't want to say that, but the charges are likely to follow?
Well, I mean, what we're trying to be is extremely clear on this. If you are within the limits of 800 cigarettes, 400 cigarillos, 200 cigars, and 1 kilo of tobacco, you are not breaking any rule. If you are in excess of those limits, then all of your tobacco products will be seized. And if you are seriously in excess of those, depending on the outcome of the discussion and interview with the customs officer, it may be a case where revenue may take a prosecution. Now, they would be very, very serious cases. But you do have to realise that there are people coming through Dublin Airport, various ports and other airports around the country that are abusing the personal use relief very significantly. And we have come across situations, people with 5, 6, 7, 8, 10,000 and even more cigarettes, and they will say to us they're for personal use. And we know that there's no way they could be for personal use. We have had situations where organised crime groups have come through the airport, and they have been between them. They have tried to bring in in excess of a third of a million cigarettes. Now, obviously, this is not for personal use, and in those type of cases, we would look for prosecution.
And revenue has secured 49 prosecutions or convictions, actually, in fact, for offences relating to tobacco smuggling. So it's not an idle threat. That's already happening and has happened at quite a high level through 24.
Absolutely, it certainly isn't an idle threat. But once again, if you look at the context of this, and it's very important to note that the illegal tobacco market in Ireland is supplied through a range of channels. There's smuggling, there's manufacture, there's local distribution, there's sale, there's online sales, and there is also the abuse of personal reliefs, which are meant to be available to those who are travelling, you know, on the occasion, back into Ireland from holiday, from business or whatever. And those reliefs, we believe, are very generous. Okay. And indeed, your colleagues in the press yesterday were surprised at how generous they were. But we are aware that from our intelligence, from information that's available from other agencies, and from our analysis of the latest tobacco consumption survey, that over a third of cigarettes and almost half of all roll-your-own tobacco that's consumed in Ireland is not being taxed in Ireland. Yeah. And this includes both the tobacco products that are legally purchased and then those that are illegal.
Yeah.
So to us, it's not an either-or situation in terms of how we address the these channels in which the illicit product gets on the market. We will look at, we will have an enforcement focus on smuggling, on manufacture, on distribution, but we also will have it on the abuse of the personal release.
For sure. And listen, I'm speaking to you from the northwest of Ireland, and the other big access point for these types of products is via Northern Ireland, and that's a different conversation altogether. One final question, and I'm not sure if this, we're talking of tobacco products, not nicotine products, but are there any regulations at this point in terms of, because it's becoming financially viable to do this now, of importing vape juice or e-liquid? Is there any rules and regs on that at the moment? And I'm not on about in terms of in-hand luggage versus hold luggage, but I can't imagine we're too far away from it if they're not in place at this point.
Well, they're not in place at this moment in time. The nicotine pouches, as you talk about, are not excisable products.
I've lost you there altogether, but I think we got the thrust of that. Thank you very much indeed for that. So at this point, they're not tobacco products, and there's no sort of nicotine, what is it? Import duties as such at this time. I think that's what I got. Right, let's take a quick break. Seems strange to say, but going to the dump was a phrase I would use or would have heard quite a lot when I was a young person. There were dumps all over the place. across Donegal. Clochfin, Remelton, Pettigo, Ardra, Buncrana, Corky, Bundoran, Ballyshannon, Carrick Town, and on it goes. Dumps all over the place. And they're still there, I suppose, aren't they, really, underground? Conor O'Carroll's an investigative journalist with the Journal Investigates, and he joins me now. Hi, Conor.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Right, so these were landfills, effectively, in every town and village, it seems, right across our region and across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose these are classified as historic or closed landfills. And what that basically means is that they were a landfill site that was operated by a local authority without a waste license between 1977 and 1997. And I suppose the issue with these sites is that they predate kind of a lot of the modern pollution control measures that you would have now in kind of waste sites. And so what our investigation has found is that there are over 260 historic landfills across the country, which have been kind of left in limbo, many of which have been categorised as high or moderate risk of causing environmental damage. And I suppose when these pollution control measures came in, I think back in 2008, the EPA and local authorities were both given kind of responsibilities to identify the landfills in their area and make moves to kind of make sure that they weren't going to cause environmental damage or were likely to cause environmental damage in the future. And the way they do this is that the local authority kind of identifies the landfill, carries out the environmental kind of risk assessment, and then submits what's known as a certificate of authorization to the EPA. And then the EPA makes kind of a determination on that and instructs the local authority as to kind of what remedial works, if any, are needed. But what we've found is that there are kind of failings on both sides. Some landfills that have been submitted to the EPA have been waiting over 10 years for a decision. I think it was 14 across the country.
But there seems to be delays at every level of this. There's about 20 of them in Donegal.
Yeah.
Right. And all of this rubbish, historic rubbish from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it's all still there. You can't see it. It's under soil, but it's all still there and potentially seeping into waterways and God knows what.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, of the 23 historic landfills in Donegal, just three of them have been submitted to the EPA by the local authority. You know, that's just 13%. So there's the local authority hasn't fulfilled its obligations. Now, it should be said that only one of these landfills is categorised as high risk, but nine have been categorised as a moderate risk.
But that's just to let people know, that's Dunloe Town Dump. Right, so the risk rating, I'll just go through the moderates, if that's all right. Clochfin Dump, mm-hmm. Remelton Town Dump, Corky Dump, Bundoran Town Dump, Ballyshannon Town Dump, Carrick Town Dump, Carndonagh Town Dump, Dunkaneely and Crocakeehan. Right, so they're at moderate risk, the rest are low, and as we heard, Dunloe Town Dump is high. How are they graded in terms of risk, Connor?
Yeah, I suppose the two kind of main risks associated with these is landfate leachate, which is when kind of rainwater seeps through the landfill and it extracts kind of harmful chemicals and stuff from the waste, and it then makes its way into water. That's one of the main kind of environmental risks. But there's also a risk of kind of a buildup of landfill gas from the decomposing waste, which can then, you know, release, huge quantities of carbon monoxide and CO2. So those are kind of the two main risks. And when the local authorities are doing their environmental risk assessment, they look at these risks and they try and determine, you know, what is the risk of, you know, is there a local stream nearby that could be impacted? You know, are there dwellings near the landfill that, you know, that might be at risk? And so I suppose it's a fairly intensive process. Mm. And these risk ratings can change over time, depending on, you know, a number of factors. So I suppose, you know, while we only have one high risk landfill in Donegal at the moment, it could be the case that some of these moderates are upgraded. As further kind of investigations are done.
Yeah, I don't see there's another one. I'm not asking you this is just me sort of rambling a bit. The biggest one, I would imagine, or one of the biggest one, was close to Ballantrae in the south of the county. And as far as I'm aware, the runoff from that is actually collected and taken away for treatment or for dumping. But I don't see it listed here. But I'm not putting that to you, Connor, because you're looking at this from a national perspective. Right, so the certificate of authorization, is that requested by a local authority to the EPA? And what exactly is happening in that process? So the certificates of authorization that have been applied for Carrick Town Dump, which is classed as a moderate risk, Dunloe Town Dump, which is classed as a high risk, and also Duncan Ely, which is classed as a moderate risk. So what is happening there in that process? So what are the councils seeking, and to what end?
Yeah, I suppose what they're seeking, I suppose, is permission or guidance on how to make sure that the landfill is safe. It's an obligation that is, they have to seek these certificates under the regulations. And essentially what happens is that the EPA come in and they scrutinise the local authority's environmental risk rating and their reports, and they try and make a determination as to whether there is a substantial risk or what the risks are and what we can kind of do to, or what the local authority can do to mitigate those risks.
Have you any examples of mitigation? Because I'm not sure what the situation is in Donegal, but certainly around the country, some of these sites have been developed and there's potentially developments on them, sports pitches. I don't know what could be there, but like what can you do to mitigate against the pollution from a dump that's been buried underground for, potentially 20, 30 years?
Yeah, two of the main things can be kind of installing a landfill cap, which I suppose just kind of caps the waste off and tries to contain it kind of where it is and I suppose just kind of leave it there with continual monitoring, I suppose, to make sure that the cap is working. Or there's also drilling kind of holes in the ground to release the landfill gas or any buildup of landfill gas to make sure that it doesn't kind of build up and kind of reach a critical point. So those are the two kind of main remediation efforts that are done. There really isn't kind of because of the sheer amount of waste that is buried in some of these sites, it's not a case where they're digging this all the waste up and taking it away. They're kind of just leaving it and trying their best to kind of make sure that it doesn't impact anything else.
Obviously we have flood zones, and flood zones are changing. Places are becoming more exposed. Coastal erosion could be a factor in some of these, particularly in Donegal. Like, how is that? Is that being factored in by, agencies such as the EPA, the planning authority? I don't know what. Like, I've gone through quite a lot of planning applications, as you might do when I was working full time in the newsroom. And I never really came across a historic landfill being mentioned. You know what I mean? So I wonder how much of it's a factor.
Yeah, I suppose the risk of being in flood zones or special areas of conservation, these would be considerations within the risk assessment that the local authority carries out. And I suppose that would be certainly, especially in flood zones, because as I mentioned, the land leachate from rainfall is a significant concern. So if you then dump a huge amount of water on top of that during a flood, then there's absolutely a kind of an elevated risk of more environmental damage occurring. They are considered, I suppose, within the environmental risk rating that the local authority carries out.
And is it clear what the risk is of the buildup of gas or how that's mitigated? I've never heard of random explosions in places, so, what are the consequences, do we know, of the potential buildup of gas?
Yeah, I think it is something that can happen. I don't think it's like a particularly, we don't want to scare your listeners that there is this kind of buildup of gas randomly around Donegal. I don't think that it's that dramatic. But I suppose it's a possibility. It's something that could happen if it wasn't contained and it wasn't looked after. But then also, I suppose, with even if the gas is escaping and escaping into the atmosphere, not only does that obviously have a climate impact, but you know, if there's a house right next to where the historic landfill is, you know, that's not great for the inhabitants in the house, or any kind of dwellings that are around the former landfill site. Because you've got CO2 and methane gas, you know, releasing into the atmosphere.
Yeah, of course, and the radon gas is a big problem in other areas. You don't need anything that adds to that. So what's next then? So, like, do local authorities need to up their game and apply for certificate of authorizations across all of their dumps, and then the EPA presumably then has to put more feet on the ground because they're way behind in this. To actually assess risks and potential mitigation where needed. That's what kickstarts this. Like, what feedback have you been getting? Do people recognise this as a problem and say, oh, blooming hell, yeah, right, we need to get on that? What have you been told in your responses to inquiries?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when we reached out to local authorities, they generally told us that kind of it was a resourcing issue, that you know they had competing responsibilities, they had other things that they had to look after, and you know some of these remedial works can be, I suppose, expensive for local authorities. Now there are government grants available for this. But I suppose that was kind of the main feedback that we got. In terms of the EPA, they did say that again, they have competing responsibilities and resources limitations. But they also said that, you know, when they issue a draft certificate of authorization, in two thirds of cases, a local authority will appeal that in some shape or form, and that'll delay the process even further. So it really is kind of, you know, both sides of the coin need to kind of, I suppose, make improvements in what they're doing at the moment.
Yeah. Bizarre one. All right. Listen, thanks for that. Good story. Well done. Thank you. That's Conor O'Carroll, investigative journal with the Journal Investigates. You know, there's a lot of resources put into checking on septic tanks and stuff. So I run through these for you because, again, like, I going to the dump was part of it, part of life, right? And it was all over the county. So, Crockerkeehan, Duncan Ely, Mount Charles Town Dump, Falcarra Town Dump, Lochinure Town Dump, Glenties Town Dump, Carndonagh Town Dump, Rathmullen Dump. There was a dump on Rory Island, on Island Roy, one. Dunlow Town, which is the one high-risk dump on the list. Knocknafoher Dump, Ballyratton Dump, Port New Dump, Carrick Town Dump, Ballyshannon, Bundoran, Corky Dumps, Buncrana Town Dump, Ardra Town Dump, Pettigo Town Dump, Remelton, Cloughfin. I don't see the I can't remember the townland. I don't see the Ballantra Dump on the list here, and I think that actually is still having to be maintained. That was one of the main dumps, wasn't it? People travelled from all the bin lorries travelled from all of the country to all of the county to dump into that dump. Remarkable, really, when you think about what used to go on. Any memories of that or anything you want to pass on? Or do you remember how big the dump was in your area, or did you work on it? Or, you know, have you anything to add on that that might sort of make that story, you know, a little bit more relevant? Right, I'm still trying to think of the name of the townland from Ballantrine. It's really annoying me, but I'll get it during the break. During the break, back after these. Yesterday, we had a wonderful response to our Cadbury Secret Santa initiative. We've teamed up with Cadbury Secret Santa again this year, who have over 20,000 bars to give away. And to celebrate the return of Secret Santa, we've got €500 to give away on Friday. So that's €250 of a one-for-all voucher for you and €250 one-for-all voucher for someone you nominate, someone special in your life. So to be in with a chance to win, all you need to do is tell us why you would want to surprise someone special with a Secret Santa chocolate bar this year. Why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to surprise someone with a Cadbury Secret Santa bar? Tell us about someone in your life who deserves your Secret Santa bar this year. So as I say, €250 one-for-all voucher, which you can spend pretty much anywhere for you, and also a €250 voucher for the person you are nominating. At the very least, what this does is give an opportunity for you to put in text and maybe put out on the radio a message about someone who's very special to you in your life. So it's all thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. And don't forget, if you want to send a bar to someone in secret, look out for the special posters that are dotted all across our county. So tell me about the special person in your life, what's special about them. Text or WhatsApp 086 6025000, 086 6025000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And as I say, we had some lovely, lovely messages in yesterday. And by the way, you know, yesterday's was a very special person who's gone through great difficulties in their lives and still persists in helping others. But it's not all about that. That's really important too. But people can be in special in very different ways. So just let your imagination run wild. A caller says, re-dumping, there is no enforcement in this country and just paltry fines. The government doesn't care about the environment, and that's why they're trying to bring in laws to stop people taking cases to protect the environment. Oh, just to let you know, there's an oil spill at Bunlin Bridge between Milford and Cranford, so take care there. It's a tricky enough area of the world to navigate at the best of times, but I'm told there's an oil spill there at Bunlin Bridge. I just heard Simon Harris say that he saw big opportunities for Irish builders to rebuild parts of Ukraine, yet he's repeatedly said in recent weeks that we do not have enough builders in Ireland to build the required number of houses that Ireland need. You know, we can't be exporting builders after we've made a commitment to build 300,000 houses in 5 years. Good morning, Greg. I take it you saw no cheap Ukraine or Palestinian flags flying about. You had no problem with any of them on poles, house windows, on car stickers, everywhere. You see, this is a person that literally just didn't listen to what I said, but I appreciate the text. I'm going to continue reading it. Every Irish flag's a flying to say, this is Ireland, not the third world country. That's fine. But most people don't find the flags as offensive at all. It's the respect for the flag, nailing them to a pole and then blowing left, right and centre and in tatters. That's all I'm saying. Ukrainian flags, I've seen them around the place. I'm not complaining about them either. And I haven't seen too many Palestinian flags flying, to be completely honest with you. So you're kind of trying to paint me into a corner that I'm not in. But I take your point. And then they say you've no pride in the flag, which again speaks to someone who didn't listen to a word I said, which is fine. I don't mind. Listen, who am I? I'm just simply saying I love the flag and I'd have no problem on a flagpole at every house in the country. And then the person says that I don't love the flag or have no pride in the flag. Morning, Greg. The new head of the Guards has warned that non-Irish men coming into Ireland are being radicalised. This is a very worrying issue for our churches and schools, as these are the places these people may well attack. Indeed, he says that was one of the threats that they're looking for. We read that in the newspapers yesterday, the radicalisation of young men. Re-cigarettes, so a Donegal citizen can fly into Belfast and not face these rules. I'm not sure what the rules are in terms of taking the tobacco limits from the Europe into the UK. I can check them for you. These rules wouldn't apply because it's not Dublin Airport, right, or a port in Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. But the UK are quite, and the Belfast, for the purpose of this conversation, is in the UK. They've got their own rules and regs and are quite strict in relation to that as well. 159.9 in both filling stations in Bridge End for diesel. You see, you know, there's great savings. That's and other places it's 181. So that's 160 by the shout. And that's 20 cent per litre of a difference in Donegal, which is really quite remarkable. Reflags, convoys riddled with cheap Timu-looking tricolours flying halfway down poles, looking like they're at half-mast. Ridiculous looking, not celebratory at all, just tatty and disrespectful looking. That's the point I was trying to make. I don't know what point the people... I do know the point that people are trying to make, but it looks trashy. It doesn't look like, oh, this is Ireland, we're proud to be Irish. It looks like, oh, we've got these cheap flags and we've nailed them to this flag post and they're blowing up, down, left, right and centre and backwards half the time. That's separate, actually. What I've said there is actually separate to the flags issue. It's about our own flag looking like tat, and that's the way they're being made look. A caller says, re-dog fouling, it's not hard to know the dark evenings are here. Remelton is brutal again with dog dirt. It's absolutely ridiculous. These people can lift it when it's bright, but couldn't care less when it's dark. I never really thought about that. Is it kind of even the people that would clean up after their dogs in the summer use the cover of darkness to say, stuff it, it doesn't matter. Right, never thought about that at all. All right, 086 60 25,000, the WhatsApps and texts that money. Really busy on the text lines. We'll get to those and the rest of the day's content after the news.